Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Remote Work Wednesday. On behalf of the Remote Online Initiative and the K-State Extension Community Vitality Team, my name is Ron Wilson. I'm director of the Huck Boyd Institute for Rural Development at K-State with K-State Extension Community Vitality. Thanks to Deborah Cole, who's our state program leader coordinator in Community Vitality for K-State Extension. This is a project of the Remote Online Initiative. You can see on your screen the website kansasremotework.com. Through that program, we're offering month-long online classes that enable participants to become trained and certified as a remote worker or a remote work team leader. We're an outgrowth of that is these free Zoom calls on the second Wednesday of each month for anyone interested in remote work. So our next one will be on June 10, that will feature Sherry LaGrange Alec, who is a licensed clinical psychotherapist and a certified telemental health provider. That's in caps, so it must mean something. Telemental health provider. She provides both online and in-person counseling sessions. And so she can speak to the telehealth aspects of remote work and mental health. Please note that next month's session will begin at 11 a.m. Due to scheduling reasons, we're going to start an hour early rather than on lunch and learn format. Of course, the purpose of these sessions is simply to learn about the opportunities and challenges of remote work. And today we're extremely fortunate to have an outstanding speaker who I'm going to ask Deborah Cole to introduce.
Thank you, Ron. Let me.
And Deborah used to work with our speaker, so I think she has the inside track on this information.
Well, thank you, Ron. It is my privilege to introduce Dr. Stephanie Bannister, who is the president of First Gen Forward. With over two decades of experience in higher education, she's dedicated her career to advancing student success, community building, and leadership development. Stephanie previously served as the Assistant Vice Provost for Student Success at Kansas State University, where she began working in 2001 within the Division of Student Life and Housing and Dining Services. Before her time at K-State, Stephanie was the Associate Director for Student Living at the University of Kansas, where she directed two residence halls and traveled nationwide as a consultant for Alpha Gamma Delta International Fraternity. A sought-after consultant, Stephanie has worked within higher education institutions and nonprofit organizations on strategic planning, reaccreditation, and philanthropic support. She also serves as an external reviewer of programs. Stephanie holds a BA from Fort Hays State University, MS from the University of Kansas, and a PhD in education from Kansas State. She's a graduate teaching faculty member in the College of Education at K-State and is an active member of the Manhattan, Kansas community. A passionate advocate and ally for first-gen students, Stephanie resides in Kansas with her husband, the Honorable Grant D. Bannister, Chief Judge for Kansas's 21st Judicial District, whose name was on my son's jury summons just a couple of days ago. We laughed about that in my house. Together, they are proud parents of Sydney and her partner, Jake, William and Grace, and grandson, Lawrence Miles. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining us today, and we will turn it over to you.
All right, wonderful. Hello, everybody. I am going to share my screen, and I'm going to ask if you would be willing to give me a thumbs up, use your emojis, and let me know that you can. I see Ron with the actual thumb, letting me know that you can see my screen. So thank you again for the opportunity to be here with you today. As Deborah said, my name is Stephanie Bannister. I have the honor of serving as the president of First Gen Forward, the Center for First Generation Student Success. And prior to that, I had the opportunity to serve at Kansas State University. I lead a national, fully remote organization. So this topic is really very near to and dear to my heart, and I had a bit of a learning curve when I stepped into this space to figure out how to make meaning and have impact. And Our office, the center, is completely virtual. And while we do get to fortunately convene as a team in place-based work, our day-to-day is very much like this Zoom call. We use project management software. We use Zoom to do our chats and direct messages. It operates as our phone system. We do all of our calls on that, and then would be nowhere without Google Drive. And what I would share in all of that is that almost every day, not unlike when you are place-based in work, something on a screen gets misread or misinterpreted. And what I hope to share today is just some lessons about why that happens and the things that we can actually have control over and do to avoid those sort of what I would call miscommunication moments. So I'm going to start off by welcoming the opportunity to just name the problem that I think we all know exists, but we often don't say out loud. So during our time together today, I hope we can move through naming that problem. I would like to provide you with a source that has proved to be a really helpful framework that our organization uses, and I'll share a bit about that through the lived experience that I have on a day-to-day basis. And then I'll invite you at the end to move to action within the own teams that you lead within a remote experience. So the problem we don't name, but we should go ahead and just say out loud, is why does remote work feel harder than it should? A source that I want you to consider is a book called Digital Body Language. This book was really helpful in helping me understand maybe where I wasn't reading the room and meeting my team where they were. Part of that was because they were digital natives and I was a digital adapter. I also work with a multi-generational team across time zones. So there's just a different set of body language that gets used in our world of work. And that requires us to really be able to read the room and know that the same message we send, even if it's written or shared through a direct message or an emoji, that gets read differently depending upon where we sit generationally or where we are with our adoption and use of technology. I'm going to do this through the lens of what I've learned in leading a large national organization that's fully remote. And I'll share with you the three practices that we hold to every day in the work that we do, and then introduce an activity that I hope you can consider building with any community you interact with in a virtual setting. Okay, so we started by naming the thing. Let's dive into why that matters. So when we think about not talking about the fact that remote work is challenging, that's a real gap because body language didn't just disappear when we went remote, it became digital. And we know that 70% of digital communication gets misinterpreted. Not 7, not 17, 70%. And that is not a soft skill problem. That is truly a business operations risk. There are really three elements of this that I think help underscore the urgency behind understanding digital body language. The first is that silence reads as ignoring. When you don't reply, when you don't signal an emoji, when you're on a Zoom call, when you don't thumbs up a Teams chat, you are replying. And that language or a gap in language, but by not signaling that you've read, you've heard, actually gets interpreted as indifference. And it took me a while to grapple with that. The other thing that was a real learning curve for me was understanding that punctuation and emojis can read as anger. I know that sounds really absurd, but it's so true depending upon the generation that you're working with. And then finally, anytime we are using the CC, BCC, reply all feature, those choices really broadcast power. And who you include really becomes a political action, if you will. So, an example that I would use of this, the first probably 6 months on my job, anytime I was on a Zoom meeting, I did not engage in the chat because my orientation was that I was solely focused on the face on the screen that was talking, even while slide sharing. And that's how I was signaling, I'm nodding, I'm leaning in. But the message it actually sent to my team when I was had the opportunity to get feedback was that I wasn't interested in building community. I wasn't engaging with the work they were presenting. I wasn't posing questions or celebrating, which was not my intention at all. It was just I had a different orientation to what body language would signal, I hear you, this is resonating with me. So before we dig in to how to fix this, I want to share with you, I'm going to go back to that source, the digital body language book, and really I would encourage you to get it to read it, but I'm going to share with you my, if you will, book review of the things that I took away and I apply. And really, at the core of the book, the takeaway for me is that reading is the new form of listening when we consider remote and virtual work. And this framing comes from Erica Dewan's digital body language book. She's a researcher who teaches at MIT and Harvard. And there are really these three statements that stuck with me as I read the book and thought about how I as a leader could show up at work in a really thoughtful and intentional way. And that first is really reading carefully. When we're in person, and hopefully today when I'm with you, we're virtually, I'm nodding, I'm leading, I'm leaning in. If we stop slide share, I'll try to mirror facial expressions. That's the gift of when we get together and we're physically together in community. The online equivalent of that, when we're working virtually, is that we take time to read the whole message that someone sends us, be that in a chat, in an online meeting, or through a Teams or Zoom message. We read it on purpose before we re reply. And where reading connects so powerfully to listening is this notion of really writing clearly, which writing clearly is the new empathy. Ambiguity in virtual spaces and remote work isn't neutral. It costs our colleagues time and emotional energy when we don't provide enough context. And actually, really clear context and directions, that's the new act of kindness in a remote workplace. And then finally, a short call is worth a thousand emails. I was so shocked when I transitioned out of my place-based role at K-State to a virtual space. My email inbox dropped dramatically. I got very few emails because my world of work remotely comes in the form of Zoom messages, online meetings, project management tasks, Google Drive comments, right? So what I've learned is to not go back to over communicating by email or by messages, but to stop and think about when complexity or emotion is high, I need to consider the channel that I'm going to leverage to communicate, because sometimes a short phone call or video call is faster and kinder to my colleagues. One of the biggest adoptions I made after I read this book in my world of work is Zoom has a really cool feature where you can record video messages. And I am very much a reflective processor. I'd rather have four or five short Zoom calls before a meeting, but my team does not value that. It actually raises anxiety for them. So what I've taken to do when I have a new project or idea I want them to consider, I'll record a short video message. I'll share that with them by Zoom. They can take it in at their own pace. And then after they've had a chance, they'll respond and say, yes, I understand, or I need more context, or here's where it would make sense for you to park that idea or move it forward. So really thinking about the channel and the way in which I can meet my team where they are, but also provide clarity and context in a really meaningful way. So these three insights that come from the book really move into four practical strategies, and I'm going to walk through those. I want to do a quick check though. So I started by saying, what's the problem we don't name, right? We don't talk about why remote work is harder when maybe it shouldn't be harder. We started there. So we've named the problem. I introduced you to a source that you could consider, which is that of digital body language. And now we're going to really move into the four principles. And that's the foundation for everything that's going to follow. So I'm going to share those with you now. So the first is that of value visibly. Reading email with care and attention, as I said earlier, or a Zoom or Teams message, that is the new art of listening. Valuing visibly means making your respect visible in a medium where we don't have the benefit of eye contact and body language at the same pace that can do that for us. What that looks like in practice is replying and being responsive within a really clear window. As I said at the top of our time together, you know, silence speaks. So make sure that your silence isn't saying what you didn't mean to say. And sometimes it's as easy as I received your message. I want to give it some thought. I'll be back in touch with you tomorrow. That can help provide that assurance that we're on track. React, acknowledge, and name what you read. When I was working at K-State with Deborah, actually, we talked a lot about in leading a large transformative project that we couldn't just get stuck in brainstorming. When we left a message, someone had to own a decision and the action. And oh my gosh, if that hallmark is not critically important in a remote workspace, we have to react, acknowledge, and name. And it's critical to say, got it. I read the message. Going to follow up with you. It's also critical to go ahead and signal with that emoji, be it on a reaction or in a meeting or a Teams chat that you received or a Zoom chat that signals, I got this message. I've read it. Thank you. All of those things that I didn't know by not leveraging the emoji or the comment in a Zoom chat were inadvertently saying, I'm not listening or I don't value your message. The other opportunity that I think to be really mindful of that can get lost is an over communication of when we share information, we're also forwarding the credit. So when we're sharing someone else's work that we've been working on collaboratively and virtually, being really clear that we name the person that we collaborated with that work on to help validate their efforts and their contributions. And then really think about how we tailor the channel to the person and the message, not to our own convenience. And I'll give an example of this. So my preferred way of communicating because of my background would have been in writing by email. What I know is there are channels that works really well for on my team, for my business operations team with approving payments, documenting that in writing is critical. But with my operations team who manage our project management software and our cadence of work, documenting that in Asana is actually where that needs to happen in the project management software, not in a Zoom chat, not in a meeting conversation, not in a email. So I've had to learn to use the channel for the message and for the team member. And the cost of not valuing visibly is that our teammates can feel invisible and eventually begin to disengage when we're not interacting and acknowledging communications. This is a tough one. Decisions get relitigated because no one said, I've got it. We will stay in this cycle and pattern of brainstorm and ideation and never move to action, because we were unable to say, you know what, I've got it. I'll take a next step before the next meeting to come back with this update. Those people who are really shining and are exemplars are doing invisible work that never gets seen when we're not forwarding up the work that they're contributing to. And junior staff that might be at a different generational point and be a digital native, they'll read silence as disapproval, and that begins to erode trust and create conditions where creativity gets stifled and they hold back. So once we are really valuing visibly, the next question for me is how do I make sure that the actual message of what I'm trying to communicate gets through? So the second principle is really about how we communicate carefully. And I tiptoed into this when I talked about the channel and the message earlier. So most remote miscommunication, in my experience, isn't because people are bad writers or bad communicators. It's because they picked the wrong channel and they wrote in the wrong channel. So the modality of the communication didn't meet the team member where they were. When I think of channels, I like to think of them in this laddered form. So there's email, which we're all familiar with, that provides a record, it documents a decision, it provides an asynchronous update. There's chat and direct messages, that's for quick questions, social checks, texture, light coordination, fast, low stake. Communication. There's doc comments if you work in a Google Doc environment where there's just iterative, creative feedback on artifacts. And it's best when the conversation is about a thing we can both see to use that doc comments. And then there are video calls. And those are really high stakes when we think about energy and investment of time. They are a place and a channel we can leverage to avoid ambiguity, address emotion, conflict, and it is an expensive channel to use. So we should be sure that we're using it when it really matters most. These three rules of thumb I found really helpful in just my day-to-day work. And they're the ones that I have on my computer screen and I go back to. And it's that first notion, if it's going to take me four emails to communicate a message, then I need to schedule a call. That doesn't mean I'm cold calling or scheduling a meeting for the sake of a meeting. I'm thinking about the complexity multiplied by the emotion involved, and I'm priming my team. Maybe I'm recording a video message and sending that, and then inquiring what would be a way to organize this work and move it forward. And then from there, I'm scheduling a call to get all folks on the same page. I've tried to be sure that I'm really thoughtful about the subject lines and headlines I use. Not just in my email communication, but in my Zoom and team chat communication. I always lead with the ask and then the why, so that people are really clear on the message and why the message is coming. And then even though my inbox and my notifications might be constantly unread, I am continually signaling that I've got it. Because acknowledgement is half the battle. And then I can do my own administration of myself to go back and ensure that I followed up and that I've really communicated in a thoughtful way. So when we think about handling these channels or these stair stepping of modalities in which we can communicate, the next principle is about the work itself. How a remote team can actually move work forward and get things done. And that's to really ensure that you create the conditions on your team to collaborate with confidence. Confidence on a remote team doesn't come from being in the same room. And I will share with you that was my biggest hesitation in moving from a place-based leadership role at K-State into a completely virtual environment. I really thought I'm not going to be able to build community. I don't know how I'm going to supervise people. How will I create buy-in to really deep, hard, transformative change work? But it isn't about being in the same room. It comes from creating a shared structure. So when we think about the fact that when we're place-based or we're in office, the benefit of that team is they get to coordinate their work for free. Because of proximity. So if I'm walking to the restroom or the water fountain, I'm having a follow-up conversation. If I'm walking to a meeting and I see someone, I'm saying, "Hey, I really like this thing you shared. I'm going to follow up with you," right? There's all this second and third space place where we get to coordinate our work and move it forward together. The challenge with being remote is we have to design that on purpose. And I think these four practices really create a framework for creating that design that will build trust and a high-performing functioning team. And the first is that we get really clear on who owns the work, especially if we're doing creative iterative work. We need to be clear about the name of the person who's leading that meeting, who is making the decision, what is the date we have the deliverable by. Nothing will kill momentum in a remote space like leaving a meeting with a statement, we'll figure it out later. It's just defeating when you work remotely to have to go back to your desk and be like, woof, another meeting where we didn't make progress or I didn't get an answer. So, what is the clear ownership decision that we can practice that will help create the conditions for trust? There needs to be visible artifacts. If it isn't in writing, if we are not documenting our work, it's not happening. And that can feel really harsh. And that was one of the biggest areas for growth in my organization when I joined. We had folks on our team of different generations, not just digital natives, digital adapters, if you will, who refused to use our project management software because they didn't want to learn it. That's not how they wrote or thought. And the challenge with that is that their work wasn't visible to anyone. So we would show up to a meeting for planning for an in-person convening, and the leader who had not adopted how to make the artifact visible would be frustrated that nobody reacted to their idea. But it wasn't visible because it wasn't documented in the project management tool that everyone's in. It was only in their Google Drive. And it can sound harsh to go to a colleague and say, I've got to have you document your work here. But it's actually really liberating because it removes frustration for them and it unlocks the contributions of your team. The third thing is to think about decision logs and documentation, what we choose, why we choose it, and what we're going to revisit. So, documenting that in our workflow is really critical. And future you will be really thankful that present you did that thing. The number of times I say, thank goodness for past Stephanie. She put these ideas in an agenda and built out tasks for them in the project management tool because I knew in the run-up to the work, there wouldn't be the time to plant the seeds before that next meeting. So the decision log documentation is just an invaluable asset for a remote team. And then finally, time zone fair rituals. Oh my gosh, time zone math. Whoa, it's just challenging, right? But when I consider the fact that our team spans four time zones, we've thought really critical about what are the ways in which we rotate meeting times so that the same coast doesn't always pay the cost for when that meeting or events happens. Practices like what you all do here today, where your remote work Wednesday happens over the noon hour, allow people across all time zones to log in at a place and time where their attention and focus can be committed to the task at hand. The other thing to remember when working across time zones is we have this great technology now where we can record things. So being absent from a meeting doesn't penalize someone's contributions to the team or create them from not having the opportunity to build shared understanding. Record what matters so that absence or the ability to step away and practice self-care isn't a punishment. You don't lose momentum. You're still moving forward. So the first three principles, the value visibly, I'm going back, the communicate carefully and the collaborate confidently, they really lean into this fourth idea of trust totally. So when you think about really trusting totally, I like to think of it in this framing of this is where small habits of practice and signals really lead to big stakes of investment. And what I mean by that is that trust that we build in the workplace is the return on investment of those things I just talked about. So the ways in which we as colleagues value visibly, communicate carefully, collaborate confidently. Those three things, while small, sending a lot of tiny signals, they compound daily. And that's how trust grows on a team or it leaks away. And the reason why it's really important to be mindful of that is these three data points that come from the digital body language books, which was just shocking to me. In 1.2 seconds, a delay is when people will begin to make judgments about others being less attentive. So that's where silence in a remote workplace can be really damaging to trust. 88% of generations in our workplace today say emojis are useful at work. I think the story would be true for memes and other forms of communication that I don't view as professional, that I have resisted putting in presentations. But I have found leading this work virtually across the country, it actually resonates with all learners. So leaning into what other generations are telling us about how we can build trust. And then this data point around four times. So a good rule of thumb when thinking about how to implement these strategies in a remote setting is the cost of repair of relationships on a team versus prevention. Fixing a damaged working relationship costs four times as much as preventing the damage. So, really thinking about the ways in which we invest in a remote work community and trust as a savings account. So, we're going to deposit tiny amounts by adopting these actions. And the withdrawals we make over time will be large and visible. And the leaks we have in our organization are never malicious. Like, no one has ill intent to not show up to work, doing work that's collaborative with others and meaningful. It's just small carelessness and the inability to accept that digital body language is just as powerful as body language in a place-based environment. So I found this part of Dewan's book to be really helpful, which was to for me to wrestle with the fact that I'm a digital adapter, right? I'm not a digital native, so the way in which I see and perceive communication is very different than some of my colleagues. So when I say digital natives, those are folks on our teams who grew up texting. So emojis and brevity are their native language. That's how they write, that's how they talk. Digital adapters, of which I'm part of that generation, we learned this as a second language, and I am not fluent in my second language. So sometimes I inadvertently, even though there's the same signal, there's a different dictionary being used to decipher that, right? So when we look at this table here, I've got these signals, right? So, oops, sorry. Sometimes people in response will type a K period. This is language that's okay. A digital native would interpret that as that person is cold. They are annoyed with me and the conversation has ended. I communicate that way, but I'm signaling that I'm being efficient and that I acknowledge what you say. The period at an end signals something different to a digital native than a digital adapter. One I am guilty of still on a daily basis is I love a good ellipsis. It's one of my favorite things. To me, that signals to people I'm still thinking. But what I've learned from my team is that they think I'm being sarcastic or that I'm trying to shut down communication, which is not at all what I'm trying to do. So I've really had to learn to think about sometimes the message I think I'm sending isn't the message that others are receiving. And when we multiply that by generations, by culture, by gender, by power, because of titling and organizations, humility is really the only sustainable approach we have to working in a remote space, to being open to understanding that the same message can have a different reading. So that's the framework. What I want to share with you now, as we begin to wrap up our time, is what I have learned leading this large national nonprofit organization. And these are, we try a lot of different things when we're together to talk about how do we align with our work, what are the values we have and the ways that we support and move our work forward. Everything up to now that I've shared with you has been theory. What I want to share with you now is what we actually do on a day-to-day basis in our organization. So keep in mind, again, this is an organization that serves close to 500 colleges and universities across the country. We are fully remote. This is nonprofit, mission-driven heart work that we are leading in partnership with the higher education community. In doing this, oh, here I can admit someone from the waiting room. There are these three ways in which we take on these practices every day. Thinking back to what I shared about valuing visibly, we over-communicate context, not just content. It's not enough to share the meaning. Like we are doing a leader academy as part of a pre-conference at a national conference. That's not enough. Every project we do gets a kickoff meeting. In that kickoff meeting, there is a robust agenda that talks about the work that we're going to accomplish and why we're going to do that work. Why now? Who decides and what success will look like? That happens together in a shared space, not asynchronously. So we over-communicate context. The second thing is we're really thoughtful about how we communicate carefully. We are asynchronous as an organization by default, but we do do synchronous work by design. So anytime we are meeting, there is a required agenda 24 hours ahead of time. And if we can't write it down, we don't know what we're going to say. We don't know what our call to action is for others to review and provide input on, then we're not ready to meet. And that's taken some practice for us, for everyone to have ownership anytime we have a team meeting for updating the agenda, reading the agenda, responding, and showing up, cameras on, ready to engage. Let's talk about cameras on for a minute. This is a critical way to collaborate confidently. It's also really challenging and fatiguing when you work remotely to have your camera on all the time and have your eyeballs trying to look at all the things. So our rule of practice is we always have faces on at the start and faces on at the close, and there's freedom in between. That way we get the human cues from one another. We can see eye contact, we can have smiles, we can pick up on tone. It also sends a really clear signal that the meeting starts when we show up as humans, not just at the top of the hour. So it doesn't become automatic that everyone logs on and their camera's off. They're on camera at the top of the hour, they're on camera at the conclusion of the meeting. You don't need these three practices within your organization, but I would argue that you need your three that are inherent to how you want to move your work forward. So here would be the invitation for action from here. And that's to remember that trust is built one tiny signal at a time. So some things you can do that will help you really kind of build your charter of how you want to engage a remote team in doing work that moves forward is to think about the channel you pick on purpose. Is this an email? Is this a phone call? Is this a Zoom message? Do I document it in a project management tool? Reply like you mean it. A lack of reply signals indifference. Say got it out loud and then assign yourself some administration for yourself to do that follow-up. Turn the camera on when it matters and connect with others. So I would just invite you to think about those that you work with remotely and consider, how does this land for you? What channels are you messaging on? What sort of response time expectations do you have? Have that conversation out loud. You might be surprised. When are cameras on? And when are they not? And how do we acknowledge one another and celebrate so that when something feels off, we know how to take a next step. All right, that's what I had for you. So thank you for the invitation to be here. I'm happy to engage in any questions, concerns. If you want to talk about first-gen student success, love to chit chat, but anything I can do to be helpful.
Wow, Stephanie, that was incredibly insightful. That it's that's outstanding. Got it. I tell you what, I was struck by the fact that in my mental frame, an email sent, I reply. Or they reply and okay, that's resolved, but I don't close the loop, and I can really see the value in that. I would say you spoke about the value of a phone call, and that's of course for me personally. I love that kind of interaction, but I've also come to appreciate what you touched on as the value of documentation. Because in my poor brain, I have that conversation, but if I found an email, at least will document what, when, where, that if I didn't capture it in a note, it might be lost. Any comment about that?
Yeah, that's such an interesting element. So our lead for our operations, who is responsible for deploying our project management tool and the platforms we use to document our work, hates being cold called, doesn't like meetings. Yet he would be the first to tell you he recognizes there are people who need that space to make meaning and to get clear direction on how to do the operational. So he had this growth edge of beginning to understand that he needed to run some open hours where people could pop in and ask questions with why there was a lag in them documenting their work in the project management tool. So there was this meeting in the middle of we need to do both and we need to socialize over communicate. And we need to document. And I think what's really hard for me in my remote team is everyone who is there is doing that because it is their calling and it is mission aligned. So the last thing they want to do is hold anyone accountable for not making their work visible. So we've had to do a lot of work as an organization to say that's actually harmful when we're not willing to hold one another accountable. Accountability is an act of kindness. And what are the conditions we put in place to know that I need those guardrails? Please tell me when I've overcommunicated in Zoom and I need to document it here. So I think by just naming the things, it opens up an invitation to talk about workplace culture that maybe wasn't there before. And we were just making a lot of assumptions by either emailing or documenting in a project management tool.
Wonderful. Are there specific project management tools? I think you mentioned Asana. I believe that was the term I heard. What tools have been most useful for you all?
I don't know that Asana has to be the one. That's the project management tool we have. Zoom is our communication platform. We don't use Microsoft Teams, but a lot of organizations do. I think about this a lot because it harkens the work I did at K-State and student success. How many times do we adopt a technology platform, but we don't really use a technology platform? So I would argue the question is, what are the platforms that you need to interact with within your organization or team, and have you fully adopted them? And do you have expectations for how you're going to engage in them? It's challenging with all the different modalities that allow us to do this work. The reason why I reference our project management software is that we found that we were doing a lot of communicating in chats and direct messages about key programs with milestones and due dates, and those weren't connected to our tracker within the project management tool. And we weren't linking our Google Docs to the project management tool. So we were missing comments, we were missing deadlines, we were leaving people out of decision making. So it's really about what are the tools that you have at your disposal? Have you fully adopted them? And then is there a shared expectation and accountability to their use? Not that's big brotherish, but actually an enabler, if you will, of being able to unlock full creativity across your team.
Well, and anyone is welcome to unmute and or put a question in the in the chat or pose a question. Deborah, did you have a comment or
Yeah, Dr.
question?
Bannister, there is a question in the chat just asking if slides are available to share, and I'm happy to do that if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah, I shared with Ron earlier today. I shared a PDF document that has the resources that I use in work and then a PDF of the slides. Yeah.
And we will also, we're recording this, so it will be archived on the website kansasremotework.com under the resources tab. Yes, we absolutely want you to share this with your teams. Charlotte, did you have a comment or question?
Hi, Stephanie. This is Charlotta. I do remember you. Yes. Hello. It's good
Yes,
to
hello.
see you. Hello. I just want just a little clarification. You had mentioned to document. Are you saying like document those meetings? Like somebody is actually kind of taking a s notes of the meeting? And if that answer is yes, did you find that it was taxing a lot of work to keep up with being fully engaged while you're documenting?
Yeah, that's a great question. So any meeting we do has an agenda tied to it, and there's a request to update the agenda in advance. And then we, at the top of the meeting, determine as we go if there are additional details that need built out as we're answering questions, who is on point to capture those in the agenda, so that we do have that one person who's focused on the actual capturing the artifact in real time, not having to divide their attention, and that that work gets shared. And I think that's really important because depending upon gender, title, all the things, we can put people in a position where they're doing non-promotable work and they're always being the note taker. And that should be a shared activity. And that's a great way for a remote leader to exercise leadership as well as at the top of the meeting to say, okay, we've got a shared agenda. It looks like we have some decision points. I'll take the next step to be the documenter for the meeting. Would anyone be willing to do the follow-up tasks in our project management software? So it actually creates the conditions for teamwork, if you will, by doing the documentation in a shared way.
Thank you. And I have one more question, but I don't want to take from anybody else who had a question. Okay, I'm gonna go for it.
Go for
Do
it.
you in your meetings, do y'all share like share screen the agenda? And do you also with that, do you share screen like who's taking the notes?
So we do two things. We share the agenda through our project management tool in advance. And then we always start without any slides up, drop the link to where the agenda lives, and ask people to have that pulled up. And then, depending on the content of the meeting, like yesterday, we needed to walk through a slide deck in the run-up to a national conference to talk about all of the logistics. So, during that meeting, we did slide share and we had a speaker highlighted. Everyone else had a link to the slides and the agenda. And then, anytime there was a question raised, we took everything down. We're looking at everyone together. We're
Okay.
answering that question.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Good seeing you.
You too.
Other questions? Stephanie, let me ask you about a difficult circumstance. If you have a person who, for whatever reason, is not willing to adjust or adapt the new practice, is it a matter of education? You mentioned meeting in the middle, perhaps, or some training, or is it a matter of getting somebody different on the bus? How do you handle those situations?
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, in my experience, just being honest about how that growth edge, if you will, of not adopting is impacting the team has been the most powerful driver. And that's paired with, did you know, Stephanie, that when you don't check these tasks off, the team doesn't know where we are in the approval step. No, Stephanie didn't know that because she didn't complete the training on the project management tool. We're going to set you up with a time with Rosemary, who's going to be able to walk you through that and catch you up to speed. And I think what that honest call to action does is it gives the power to the individual who's struggling to adopt the ability to do so, or the clarity on this isn't going to be a fit for me. And there have been people that we've just had to coach on and say the pace of work requires we do it in this way. Here are all the tools and all the ways. Does that still fit for you or does it not? And how can I help supporting you, making sure you're finding a team and space that aligns with the ways in which you work? But truly, to be honest, in 3.5 years, I've not had a situation by where not just naming the thing directly hasn't resolved itself. Has it been uncomfortable for the person resisting? Sure. But they've also been appreciative because no one intends to not show up. I want to do right by you all today when I come here. I don't want to do wrong and waste your time and not be prepared. But when I don't know what's needed, I can miss that mark.
Well, that's incredibly wise. Any other questions? Well, Stephanie, I tell you, I think this has really been outstanding. Thank you so much. Giving you a virtual round of applause
Yay.
here, at the very least, for a really, really terrific and insightful presentation today. So we appreciate your great work at K-State and really appreciate the work you're doing now with first generation students all across the nation.
Yeah,
Lots
thank
of
you so much.
praise in the chat, Stephanie.
Well, I'm so grateful for all of you and for everything you do. Thank you for the opportunity.
We appreciate you. Quick reminder, our next Remote Work Wednesday is on June 10. Please note it's an 11 a.m. start. Make sure you note that in your calendar, and you'll be back with us to discuss telemental health and aspects of remote work in that dimension. Again, thanks for joining us, and have a wonderful Remote Work Wednesday.